Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. In 1998, at the height of the first dot-com boom, there were about 2,800 evictions in San Francisco. After it busted, evictions declined until 2010. Since then, there have been more than 10,000 evictions, according to an analysis from the San Francisco Examiner. The influx of global capital and a new wave of tech companies like Airbnb have contributed to rising rents and displacement, and it's also sparked a backlash. A new documentary called Company Town looks at these tensions by focusing on San Francisco Supervisor Aaron Peskin's 2015 race against then-incumbent Supervisor Julie Christensen. The film includes a wide range of people, including Airbnb CEO Brian Chesky, tech billionaire Ron Conway, San Francisco Mayor Ed Lee, and a number of people who've either been evicted or have seen their neighborhoods drastically change. Joining me in studio today to talk about the fight to protect San Francisco are three guests. Deborah Kaufman and her husband, Alan Snitow, directed and produced Company Town. Their award-winning films have been in major festivals, broadcast on public television, and used by activists around the world. Their films focus on social issues and cutting-edge controversies, including Between Two Worlds and The Secrets of Silicon Valley, another great film. And Deborah Kaufman joins me in studio. Hi, Deborah. Thanks for coming in.
Good morning.
Great to see you. We're also joined by Tim Redmond, a veteran journalist who known as the voice of the revived San Francisco Bay Guardian. They just put out a slate of endorsements for this election. Tim is also the founder and editor of 48 Hills, an online progressive daily featuring breaking news, analysis, investigative reporting, and arts and culture. And Tim also joins me in studio. Hi, Tim.
Good morning.
Thanks
Happy
for coming in. And we're joined by David Talbot. David founded Salon, was a senior editor at Mother Jones, and the features editor at the San Francisco Examiner. His most recent book is The Devil's Chessboard, Alan Dulles, the CIA, and the Rise of America's Secret Government. And David was on our show talking about his latest book. You can find it by searching at yourcallradio.org. And David also joins me in studio. Hi, David. Thank you for coming in.
Hey, Rose.
So it's great to have all of you. Deborah, I remember reporting on your great film, The Secrets of Silicon Valley. I think it was in the late 90s,
well,
early
2000s? It was 2000s? About 2000, 2001 when it came out. It was about the first tech boom.
Right. And right. Here you are again. Why did you decide to do sort of a follow-up and focus on what's really happening right now in San Francisco?
Well, we've been interested, me and my partner, Alan Snitow, have been interested in following kind of the excesses of the tech community. As first in Secrets of Silicon Valley, they were very involved in gentrification in the valley, and East Palo Alto in particular was where we were telling a story about evictions and gentrification, but also telling a story about temp workers and the shift from permanent work to temporary work, is particularly at Hewlett-Packard. And now here we see 15 years later, they've shifted up to San Francisco. It's now called the sharing economy instead of the new economy. And you've got all these companies and their apps that are engaging in some of the same revolutionary and disruptive behaviors that are having really challenging and negative impacts on the city and on the people who live here, and really changing the nature of the city that I grew up in.
So you grew up in San Francisco?
Yes, I did.
You currently live in Berkeley.
Yeah, yeah.
And so when you and your husband, Alan, set out to do this film, what did you really want to explore? What did you want to learn?
Well, we were watching the gentrification and the evictions of so many people in the Mission District, and then seeing that there was going to be an election in District 3, North Beach, Chinatown, Nob Hill, and wanting to follow the race between Aaron Peskin and Julie Christensen, because it seemed to kind of crystallize the issues of housing and affordability and sustainable communities in San Francisco. And in that community, the neighborhood that's most endangered really is Chinatown. And it seemed like very few people were covering that story. So the election itself, the engagement of Airbnb over Proposition F last year, which was about trying to regulate Airbnb, was a perfect subject for a story of conflict in San Francisco.
The first thing I thought about when I watched your film is well, the first question that came up for me is, where is San Francisco Mayor Ed Lee? Because he makes so many appearances in your film, and yet today I rarely hear from him or hear about him. Tim, anytime you're on the show, I always ask you, what is Mayor Ed Lee doing right
now?
Well,
it's really interesting. I mean, one of the things that struck me, and I really loved this movie, but one of the things that struck me is, you're right, Ed Lee is everywhere working for Julie Christensen. And in fact, he held a summit meeting telling people don't vote for Aaron Peskin. And he was out campaigning for her in Chinatown and walking around. And you see him in this movie. He is not out supporting a single candidate for anything. And that was only a year ago. That was only, I mean, that the things have changed so much, and they changed so fast in the city politically.
Well, because he's a political liability.
He's a political liability now. 1 year later, the last thing any candidate for office wants is to be seen with the mayor.
Perhaps they learned that from the District 3 election last year.
Perhaps they learned that from the District 3 election, where he's actually a net negative for candidates. So where is he? I don't know. What is he doing? I mean, we don't see him out on the streets very much. We don't see him campaigning. This is the first time, and I've been watching elections in San Francisco since 1981. This is the first time I can think of in any election in San Francisco, any municipal election, that the mayor has been so totally missing in action. He hasn't signed a single ballot argument. He hasn't made a statement endorsing more than a couple of people. He's not out working any electoral things. His picture isn't on any flyers. It's really interesting.
What struck you the most about San Francisco Mayor Ed Lee in filming Company Town?
Well, the degree to which he was involved with Christensen's campaign, I mean, everywhere we went with her, he was there side by side with her. So he was involved very much in being out front. And, you know, I think that what struck me as someone who's grown up in San Francisco and watched him evolve is that he used to be a housing rights advocate. And San Francisco's changed so much, the power structure's really changed in a way. I mean, it's still always about real estate here and money, but now we have actors and players that are very different. The tech community really is different. I mean, it used to be 15 years ago when we made Secrets of Silicon Valley, libertarianism, the ideology that they were espousing was about no regulation, let's stay out of government altogether. And now the community is very involved in government to the extent that they're creating democratic clubs, pouring money into election campaigns. They really want to be involved and give policy advice to the mayor and the Board of Supervisors in a way that I think didn't exist 15 years ago.
Were you able to specifically ask him about that, how he went from being a housing rights activist to where he is today?
I did try, actually. On the street at the annual election party that's hosted by Willie Brown over at John's Grill, and, you know, he wasn't really able to answer the question adequately. I think others have asked him that question also about his own personal trajectory.
And David, I mean, you're also, you wrote a book, Season of the Witch, about activism here in San Francisco back in the day. How do you, when you think about all the changes that we're seeing, how do you really describe what's happening right now?
Well, I think it's been devastating to the San Francisco that I celebrated, which was a city of diversity, where affordability, progressive values, so-called San Francisco values. And I think in the last several years, those values have been increasingly eroded by this tidal wave of wealth and power that's taking over the city. You know, Ed Lee was, as I wrote in my book, Season of the Witch, as a young man, was a very aggressive, crusading housing activist who went up against these powers, the developers and the big real estate money. And now virtually he's owned by them. I mean, when you look at the money behind Ed Lee and his administration, you see figures like Ron Conway, the tech billionaire investor. And by the way, in the absence of Ed Lee being a factor in the current election, we have a surrogate race, I think, in Scott Wiener's race for the state Senate against Jane Kim. And I think the same money behind Ed Lee is backing people like Scott Wiener. So there is a choice for people who want to vote on the direction that San Francisco is going on in this fall and in races like Kim versus Wiener. But yeah, I mean, I think it's really heartbreaking. I mean, my own neighborhood, Bernal Heights Mission, which was when I first moved there with my wife and my kids, was an affordable, you know, former working class neighborhood, very diverse. And now it's, you know, becoming a ghost neighborhood, as we were talking about earlier. You see people with their, you know, the suitcases on rollers, the Airbnb people coming in more and more. You don't know your neighbors. The city has been taken over by greed, unfortunately.
I want to play a clip from the film in just a minute, but Joe Rodriguez Fitzgerald, who's a columnist with the San Francisco Examiner and who's been on the show many times, kind of gave you a tour of the Mission District, the district he loves and has such close connections to, and he was showing you these lock boxes on various apartments. So you've got like a gate, and then you have four apartments in the building, and there are four separate lock boxes. And Supervisor Aaron Peskin was doing the same thing, giving you a tour of Chinatown and saying, look, I can show you all these lock boxes where people have been kicked out of this building, and now it's being run as a hotel. What really struck you about that?
Well, visually, when you walk down the streets, particularly in the Mission District, you know, it's shocking how many of these locks are on the doors. We were lucky enough to have Joe Rodriguez give us that tour. And in Chinatown, it was Jeffrey Kwong, a volunteer for Aaron Peskin, who grew up in an SRO, a single-room occupancy apartment, who gave us his personal tour of, you know, the changes that are people are experiencing in Chinatown, and there are more and more lock boxes there too. So what we're seeing is this transformation of the city into, you know, kind of a place for illegal hotels, basically. But I want to at this point also say, you know, what we documented in the film was community resistance and the possibility of success of resistance and organizing. So it's not all doom and gloom.
Right, and we'll talk about that in a minute. But I think the clips and what you showed happening in Chinatown is really important, because I feel like Chinatown doesn't get as much attention at all as the Mission. It's like Mission is ground zero, and a lot of people in the Mission have a voice. They're telling their stories. I just don't feel the same way about Chinatown.
Particularly with the loss of Rose Pack. I think the you know, neighborhood, the community really took a big hit, because Rose, as I wrote about in Season of the Witch, was this great, powerful voice for the for that community. And she recently passed, of course, and so that voice is sorely missing now at City Hall.
And a lot of people who've lived in Chinatown for decades, who have very close ties there, are also being evicted. And so I want to play a clip from the documentary Company Town. And this is Jeffrey Kwong. He's a community activist in Chinatown. And during Supervisor Aaron Peskin's race, you know, Aaron was just walking the streets day after day talking to people. And Jeffrey Kwong was translating for Aaron. And here he is in a building talking about what the residents, the renters of Chinatown, are currently facing.
Before, everyone would put their clothes outside to dry it. People have been doing it for, you know, over a century before the 1906 earthquake. You know, Chinese people were doing it already. So they were getting eviction notices, this unit in particular, for drying their clothes outside. So that's what they... And then people were, had their Chinese New Year's. People were putting their Chinese New Year's greetings on the doors. You know, similar to a mezuzah in a Jewish household. Yeah, like a Chinese thing, and we'll see that. You know, we see it in Aaron's office, right? People were getting eviction notices for that, too. I think a conversation needs to be had about the morality of what is going on. How are those that are being left behind by technology, how can they survive in this economy? People move to San Francisco for a reason, right? If you change it, if you alter the fabric, it's not San Francisco anymore.
And that is Jeffrey Kwong. He is a community activist in Chinatown. During Aaron Peskin's race, he translated for Aaron as he went to a number of community meetings in Chinatown. And he's in the documentary Company Town, which is about high-tech, gentrification, and the future of our city. And you can see it. It debuts tomorrow at the Roxy in San Francisco, tomorrow at the Elmwood Theater in Berkeley, and then one day in San Rafael, Sunday, November 6th, at the Smith Raphael Cinema. And today we're joined by Deborah Kaufman. She and her husband directed and produced Company Town. Tim Redmond is a veteran journalist, founder and editor of 48 Hills. David Talbot is the founder of Salon. His most recent book is The Devil's Chessboard. David is also the author of Season of the Witch, Enchantment, Terror, and Deliverance in the City of Love. That's our city, San Francisco. Deborah, what else really struck you about walking the streets of Chinatown and interviewing people who have very close ties to that neighborhood who are being evicted or are on the brink of being evicted?
Well, I think Jeffrey Kwong himself, you know, personifies what Chinatown gives people. His family was a family of immigrants. He grew up in a single-room occupancy and then went to Harvard, came back as a community activist, volunteer for the Aaron Peskin campaign, and is now a principal of a school on the peninsula. Chinatown is the gateway for immigrants from China. And my grandparents were immigrants from Eastern Europe. You know, communities, close-knit communities that provide services like translation services, access to doctors, nurses, and health care, you know, the close-knit feeling of friendship of a community of people that are from the same place, who speak the same language. This is what Chinatown represents, and there was a plan, a Chinatown zoning plan, that really was put in place to preserve that kind of atmosphere and help immigrants become part of America and be a safe haven for them. And so we're not just losing a kind of an exotic tourist locale when we're disrupting and turning it into a place for illegal hotels. It's not just a Grant Avenue and the cute little stores there selling trinkets. It's a community full of vibrancy for people who come from another land who are becoming Americans and whose children are growing up here and contributing so much to this place.
David, what would you add?
Well, I'm a political fighter, and so, you know, what I would add to that is that Ed Lee, the man who once represented the interests of Chinatown, has sold out his own community. And it's an outrage. I mean, where is the political leadership defending that community against the avarice of these giant companies like Airbnb? If the man who actually came of age politically in Chinatown fighting that big power has sold us out, has sold out his own community, then, you know, we're in bad shape. So we really need to look for new leadership. And getting back to what Deborah was saying earlier, that's why I love Company Town, because it's not just sort of showing the awful things that are happening in the city. It's showing how people are finally getting organized and fighting back. And we did elect Aaron Peskin to the board, and that made a huge difference at City Hall.
And Tim, all of these campaigns are really grassroots, but for people who don't know how these campaigns work, it was interesting just to see Julie and Aaron take to the streets and to also hear the different approaches they took to these pressing issues.
Absolutely. And I mean, that is the beauty of having district elections of supervisors in San Francisco, is that you can run from Chinatown North Beach and you can actually meet the vast majority of the voters, and you can get elected knocking on doors. Now, in this case, both campaigns raised a lot of money, but they also did an awful lot of old-fashioned grassroots politics, because that's what works in these districts. It's very interesting to see that they had a very different approach to politics. And Aaron, of course, had the years of experience doing this that Julie Christensen lacked. And you could kind of tell that from just the retail politics, the comfort that he had just walking around and knocking on doors and talking to people, that Julie Christensen really was, it seemed a lot of times she was very uncomfortable even in the role that she had been appointed to. So,
right, because she was originally appointed
She was appointed by Mayor Ed Lee to the Board of Supervisors for that district. And you really got a sense that she was not only inexperienced, but not really comfortable in that role. So just one other thing I wanted to add, Rose, when we talk about what's happening to Chinatown and what's happening to the mission, you mentioned earlier the 10,000 evictions. It's not just the hollowing out of the neighborhood for Airbnb and hotelization. It's the loss of so many people who once lived there. I mean, the data that we've gotten and that we've put out is that in the last couple of years, there have been 10,000 people left San Francisco and have been replaced with 10,000 people whose incomes are significantly higher. And just the human aspect of this, all of the people who used to live in Chinatown who now have to go someplace else and are denied the ability to live in that community because somebody can make more money renting that out as a hotel room, is really kind of startling, and is in many ways is at the heart of what we're talking about in this film.
Well, if you'd like to join us and weigh in on these issues to talk about the changes that you have seen in your neighborhood, or if you have been evicted, someone you know, so many people who rent are constantly worried about this issue even to this day. We'd love to hear from you, 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. 8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. How have you been affected by this latest boom? What are your thoughts on last year's election? And then we've got only about, 13 days until this year's election?
Yep.
Again, depending on what happens with the Board of Supervisors, so much is up for grabs at City Hall. And so we'd love to hear from you, 866-798-8255. Deborah Kaufman is director and producer of Company Town. It opens tomorrow night at the Roxy in San Francisco and the Elmwood in Berkeley. It'll also be shown on Sunday, November 6th at the Smith Rafael Cinema in San Rafael. We're also joined by Tim Redman, veteran journalist and founder of 48 Hills. David Talbot is the author of The Devil's Chessboard, and then a great book about activism in San Francisco called Season of the Witch. Deborah, to piggyback off of what Tim said, what really struck you interviewing people about the loss and what all of these people leaving San Francisco, and so many of these people say that they're probably never going to come back?
Yeah. Well, I want to add one thing to this, that is that a lot of people who work in the tech community are also affected by the affordability crisis. It's important to say that, you know, the enemy isn't tech itself. It's the business model that's being kind of propounded and supported by the new tech elites. And it's by real estate interests from out of town, and it's by politicians who are going along with, you know, where their campaign contributions are coming from. So the issues aren't just, you know, homeless people and ethnic communities driven out versus the tech community. It's really all of us versus an economic system that's really working against the middle class and the working class and minority communities. It's really a city that's under siege now from a business model itself that's really about, profit at the expense of people. And our politicians don't seem to be able to grapple with the need for, you know, stronger regulations, for figuring out models of development that don't entail massive displacement. And I believe it's possible to have development without displacement, but our local governments seem to be unable to deal with that. And I think that there's a frustration in the community, which is why, in part, there's some activism, because people are, angry over what's happened.
Rose, can I just add something to what Deborah said about sort of the political corruption of our leadership? And this, we're talking about the Democratic Party here, by the way. I mean, when you look at President Obama's recent trip to Cuba to open up, the Cuban commerce to American companies, he brought with him Brian Chesky, the CEO of Airbnb, with him. And he was touting Airbnb and its entry into the Cuban market. Well, God help the people of Cuba when they start disrupting Havana. So, and Chris Lahane, who's the leading spokesperson, the global strategist, I think they call him, for Airbnb, a former Clinton administration, Bill Clinton administration advisor. And it goes on and on. The people from the Obama and Clinton administrations are flocking to the tech industry. President Obama himself now is being, you know, touted as a future, Silicon Valley power player. Democratic Party has been sold out to these interests, and we need to start developing a new wave of progressive leadership, which we are in this city, actually. There are a number of people running for the Board of Supervisors, for State Senate, who do represent, I think, a more progressive vision for this city and for the country.
And I should say that we did invite Airbnb to join us today, but they did not get back to us. That is David Talbot, founder of Salon. His most recent book is The Devil's Chessboard. He is also author of Season of the Witch, which looks at activism in San Francisco, and we'll talk more about that after the break. Tim Redmond is a veteran journalist and founder and editor of 48 Hills. Deborah Kaufman and her husband, Alan Snitow, directed and produced the documentary Company Town, which takes a look at how the tech boom has changed San Francisco, and I should also say outside investment. It's going to debut tomorrow at the Roxy in San Francisco, the Elmwood in Berkeley, and then on Sunday, November 6th at the Smith Rafael Cinema. This is Your Call, and we'll be back after this.
Your Call is a better show when you get involved. If you have a question, idea, or experience to contribute to today's conversation, call us at 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-8255, toll free. You can also send an email to feedback@yourcallradio.com. Or leave a comment at the show's website, set a bookmark for yourcallradio.org, and you can also tweet us at yourcallradio.
This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, it's our Friday Media Roundtable. Actually, first, I'll tell you what's coming up at 11. Today is Thursday, and that means that we do two shows on Thursdays. Our next show, a special election edition of Your Call, we will talk about the ramifications of Proposition 66 and 62 from the perspective of prisoners. Proposition 66 and 62 would change the death penalty. We haven't really heard from prisoners on these propositions, so we're going to talk about that. And then later in the show, we will follow the money in local and state races. We'll also look at so much money being poured into propositions, about $150 million so far, just for California propositions. And then tomorrow, it's our media roundtable. We will discuss coverage of the forced removal of refugees from the camp in Calais, France. And we'll also discuss coverage of the longstanding peaceful actions against the Dakota Access Pipeline. So far, more than 126 Native Americans and their non-Native allies have been arrested. That's tomorrow. And if you have a show idea or a guest idea, you can drop us a line, feedback@yourcallradio.org. Today, we are talking about the new documentary, Company Town, which focuses on gentrification, rising rents, and evictions through the lens of San Francisco Supervisor Aaron Peskin's 2015 race against then-incumbent Supervisor Julie Christensen. The film debuts at the Roxy in San Francisco tomorrow night, and after the, is it the 7 o'clock screening?
Yes, the 7 o'clock screening is co-presented with San Francisco Vision.
Great.
And we're going to have Supervisor David Campos and former Supervisor Christina Ulagi come speak with us and answer questions and have a nice dialogue with the audience. I think it's going to be a lot of fun.
Great. So if you're free tomorrow night, that's at 7 o'clock at the Roxy in San Francisco. And then it also opens at the Elmwood Theater in Berkeley tomorrow night and the Smith Rafael Cinema in San Rafael on November 6th. And today we're joined by Deborah Kaufman. She and her husband, Alan Snitow, directed and produced Company Town. Tim Redmond is a veteran journalist and founder and editor of 48 Hills. David Talbot is an activist in San Francisco and the editor, the author of The Devil's Chessboard and Season of the Witch. And if you'd like to join us, the toll-free number is 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. And let's hear from Chris, who lives in North Beach in San Francisco. Hi, Chris. Welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you so much for profiling North Beach, because you're absolutely right. The mission gets all the attention. And I have been a North Beach resident for several decades. And what I have been observing in the last, it has been ever increasing in the last, I would say, 2 years, but right now it is epidemic in proportion, the number of renovations. I'm primarily a bicycle commuter, but I do own a car, so I have to be so strategic now in when I park, because there is so much parking eliminated for all of the construction. So you're absolutely right. It has always been a point of real pride for me to see, I'm living in some of the most expensive real estate in the world, yet people can hang their laundry out their window. And the Chinatown North Beach Community College, which offers free citizenship classes and English language classes for new immigrants, used to be directly across the street from my house and since moved. But it was always amazing. Wow, there are so many new people coming to this country, learning English and learning citizenship, and we are a gateway for that. And I just can't imagine that that's not being eliminated if all of these low-income residents are being eliminated.
Well, thank you so much for calling in, Chris. We're going to take a few more calls, and then we'll get responses from our guests. Next, let's go to Lisa in Oakland. Hi, Lisa. Welcome to the show.
Hi. I wanted to talk more specifically about Airbnb. I've been in an argument with a family member of mine who's grew up in New York City and wants to move here about the new law that was passed in New York City regulating, basically eliminating Airbnb. And she seems to feel that, A, it doesn't take into account people who want to rent their rooms for because they can't afford to live in the high rents here or there. And so maybe you could talk a little bit more specifically about how Airbnb is gentrifying, because a lot of there's some argument about how what effect it actually has on rents and gentrification in San Francisco.
Well, all right, thank you. So I haven't been following what's happening in New York, but I just found a piece in the Queens Chronicle that says after New York Governor Cuomo signed legislation creating steep fines for Airbnb users who violate local housing laws, the company filed a lawsuit in federal court which said the legislation will cause them harm. The suit against the bill, which bans the advertising of apartment rentals for less than 30 days, was filed last Friday against the city of New York. The company has also requested a formal injunction and a temporary restraining order against the law. Those who advertise units on the website could be fined up to $7,500 by authorities because of the bill. Again, we did invite Airbnb to join us, but they did not get back to us. Tim, can you tell us a little bit more about this law in New York?
The argument, and I appreciate the caller raising this question, because the argument you hear from Airbnb and its allies is, well, what about the person who has a spare bedroom in her place and is living in a very expensive city and needs to rent out her spare bedroom every once in a while to a visitor from someplace else.
Which is the theme of their massively funded new TV campaign.
That it's just – that most of what this is just normal folks who are renting out a spare bedroom. And the interesting thing is nobody is against that. Nobody at City Hall is against that. Nobody in New York is against the idea that if you have a spare bedroom in your house and you occasionally want to rent it out to a visitor, but that's not what Airbnb is making money off. What Airbnb is making money off, the vast majority of their revenue, and the reason they're so upset about this, is from entire buildings and apartments being converted full time from long-term rentals to hotel rooms. Buildings that are taken off the rental market at a time when there's a desperate need for rental housing in San Francisco and turned entirely into hotels. And that's what a vast majority of what's going on in San Francisco is not. That's when you see all these lockboxes. The lockboxes on the doors are not somebody who's renting out a spare bedroom to make a little extra cash to live in an expensive market, right? Those are buildings that have gone completely to hotels from rentals. And that's what New York is upset about. That's what a lot of people in San Francisco are upset about. And Airbnb, I believe, knows that if that part of their market goes away, so does a lot of their revenue. And oh, by the way, if Airbnb decides to go public in the next year or two, so does their stock price will be way decreased because most of their revenue comes from what are in San Francisco now illegal units and what are in New York illegal units. That's where you get the evictions and that's where you get the displacement and that's where you get the impact on the housing crisis is not from me wanting to rent out a spare bedroom after my kids go off to college. I tell my son he's got to go to college because I'm going to rent out his room, which I'm not. But no one thinks that's a bad thing. All right, nobody. That's all fine. It's the evicting all of your tenants and turning it into a hotel room.
And so last year, Airbnb spent $9 million, the second largest political expenditure by a single company in San Francisco to defeat Proposition F, $5 million on TV ads alone. So that went down. Yep. And then after Supervisor Peskin won his race, he co-sponsored a bill and it passed the board. What did that bill do?
Well, what that bill does is it essentially says that Airbnb is not supposed to list illegal units
that aren't registered,
right?
To be with the city,
to do what Airbnb says is its model, to rent out the spare bedroom in your house to occasional visitors, you have to go and get a city permit, right? You have to register that unit and you have to demonstrate, number one, that you own the property and you actually live in it full time, right? And number two, you have to demonstrate that it's the only property you're doing this to. In other words, you can rent out a spare room in your house, but you can't do this in six or seven different places because obviously you don't live in six or seven different places, right? So you get that registration number, right? It costs, it was a modest annual fee, right? What the law says is Airbnb is not allowed to post any listing on their site that doesn't have a city registration number. That would wipe out 85, 90% of their listings in San Francisco and require everybody who wants to do this to actually get the necessary permit. Airbnb instantly sued. And that law is being held up in court as they do in New York. They're trying, they're going to the courts. They're desperately trying to stop this kind of local regulation because, again, that's where the money is. The money is not from the people they're advertising. The money is from the unscrupulous landlords who are getting rid of all their tenants.
But their PR pushback then is, oh, no, 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 we're going to self-regulate. We will, you know, crack down on the multiple listings. And if you trust them to do that, there's a bridge I'd like to sell you somewhere.
Yes.
There's a degree of deception in the marketing of Airbnb that is rattles me a little bit, and I think that we try to show in the film. I mean, there's a constant referring to the sharing economy mm. when it's a monetary transaction. There's a constant repetition of this mantra that, you know, we're for the middle class, when in fact the middle class is, you know, who's hurting and needing to do this because of a system that's not working for them. And it's really not about regulating it so that mom and pop can't rent out their room. It's about these illegal landlords and the degree to which they're being deceptive kind of rolls over into this creation of 100 Democratic clubs, which are really AstroTurf organizations around the country, where they are lobbying using their hosts and guests, which are now considered to be one of the largest voting blocks in San Francisco. We were told 135,000 people in San Francisco are either hosts or guests on Airbnb, mobilizing these people to defend anti-regulation, the pursuit of against regulation. And I'm not sure that hosts and guests truly understand that their personal information that they're sharing online is being used in this way to advance a political agenda.
Under, just to be clear, the legislation in San Francisco, Tim, once your child goes away to college, you'll still be able to rent that room?
If I wanted to, yes.
Right.
No, of course. And all I would have to do, if I decided to do that, all I would have to do is go down to City Hall, fill out the forms and show that I actually live in this house and pay $100 or something and get a city permit. And what the city is saying is, okay, now I've got a number. You know, I'm number 503 or whatever. Not very many people have registered, right? But let's say, so I get that number. And what they're saying is when I put that listing on Airbnb, I have to include my registration number to show it's a legal unit. That seems like a relatively normal thing for anyone to do, to basically say you can't list something on a website that is by definition against the law. But Airbnb is furious about this.
They're claiming it's a freedom of speech issue.
They're claiming it's a freedom of speech issue, and they're also claiming that the process to register is too cumbersome. Well, look, you're turning your home into partially a business, right? It's not the sharing. It's the sharing economy. If I have friends come and stay in my house, I'm sharing my house with friends, right? It is a commercial transaction when I rent a room in my house. So I am essentially opening a business. And in San Francisco, when you open a business, you need a business license and a permit, whatever type of business it is. You know, if I want to open a fruit stand in front of my house, I have to get a permit from the city to do that. So it's not anything radical or unusual at all to have to do this.
That is Tim Redmond, veteran journalist and founder of 48 Hills. Deborah Kaufman and her husband, Alan Snitow, directed and produced the new documentary Company Town. And David Talbot is a writer and journalist in San Francisco, author of The Devil's Chessboard and Season of the Witch. We did invite Airbnb to join us, but they did not get back to us. So I want to play a clip from Company Town. And in this clip, you will hear Airbnb CEO Brian Chesky and San Francisco supervisor Aaron Peskin.
I think the sharing economy is incredibly profound. Like, I don't know for sure at all, but it very well could be one of the great inventions in human history. Like, it really could be. I think people are going to be more independent. They're going to be contractors. One of our goals at Airbnb is to create one day a million entrepreneurs mm-hmm. or a million micro entrepreneurs. And I think this is something that's like really, really profound.
The whole notion of the sharing economy is nonsense. My mother taught me that when the kid at school didn't have enough to eat, and I gave them half of my sandwich. That was sharing. I didn't charge that kid $5 for half of my sandwich. This is not the sharing economy. That's a misnomer. It's an economy, and these are transactions, and people are buying and selling something. But nothing is being shared. Sharing does not connote the exchange of money.
And that is a clip from Company Town. The first voice was Airbnb CEO Brian Chesky. And then you just heard San Francisco Supervisor Aaron Peskin. And you can see the film. It opens tomorrow at the Roxy. There will be a Q&A after the 7 o'clock screening tomorrow night. It also opens tomorrow at the Elmwood in Berkeley. And on November 6th, it'll be at the Smith Rafael Cinema in San Rafael. You can join us at 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback at yourcallradio.com. And let's go next to Andy in Berkeley. Hi, Andy. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thank you for your program. I was alerted to the fact that teachers in San Francisco and their helpers are in a really bad plight on your program last, I think, Friday, recording the council meeting, whichever council that was. There's teachers that just can't even live in the area and continue on their chosen path because they can't afford to live in the city anymore. I just wanted to highlight that for your listeners.
Yeah, that's been getting a lot of coverage.
And, you know, it is absolutely true that we are seeing, in fact, we're seeing teachers get evicted in the middle of the school year. Mm. And it's, you know, it's teachers, but it's also so many other workers in San Francisco who are so vital to the city. I mean, the number one industry in San Francisco is not tech. After government and public service, it's healthcare and it's hospitality. And the people who are in those industries, the nurses, the people who clean the floors in the hospitals, the people who change sheets in the hotels, the people who are so critical to the basic economy of San Francisco are being forced out of town. And it's crazy when you have a city that the people who are needed to make that city work can't afford to live there.
Well, and it has political ramifications, too. Calvin Welch, who's a friend and political comrade of ours and also is on the board of San Francisco Vision, wrote a very good piece about this recently in the Chronicle and I think for 48 Hills, where he said, look, I mean, the Democratic, elites like Chris Lehane, who's now, a consultant or an executive, rather, with Airbnb and former Clinton administration official, who are jumping on board, this greed wagon, are basically demolishing their own urban base. The voters who vote for them in the cities, the union people, the nurses, the teachers, these are Democratic Party, this is the bedrock of the Democratic Party. And when you start eliminating them from these cities and dispersing them God knows where, you're demolishing your own political base. So, Joe Biden's sister, for instance, the great six-pack Joe, the working-class guy, his sister she's an executive with a high-priced political consulting firm that was brought in by Airbnb to demolish Proposition F last year. So, I mean, these people are selling out their own voting base.
Well, thank you for calling in, Andy. Let's take a few more callers in a row because we've got a lot of people waiting and they want to weigh in on this. Let's go to Kathy in San Francisco. Hi, Kathy.
Hi there. So I live in District 4, and I just wanted to weigh on the conversation and the concerns expressed. There's a serious imbalance of power in the city right now because when a supervisor leaves their position early, the mayor can appoint their replacement. So if Supervisor Jane Kim goes to Sacramento, that'll be almost 2 years that Mayor Lee will be able to put someone in her position. There's a measure on the ballot in November in San Francisco, Proposition D, D for Democracy. And what that will do is that it will let the people in the district elect their own replacement. And this is very important. We need to keep our separation of executive and legislative and also to deny the power of incumbency to those people who are mayoral appointments. And as Willie Brown said just in August, when I appoint someone to the board, they are expected to do what I want. So I'm hoping your panelists will talk about this and that people will support Proposition D.
All right. Thank you. We'll get a response in just a minute. First, let's hear from Dan in San Jose. Hi, Dan.
Hi there. Thanks for taking the call. It's interesting to hear basically the problem, as it sounds like, is more of supply and demand, less the villainization of the tech companies. We can either try and choke off the supply by, you know, outlawing Airbnb and their ilk, or we can, you know, outlaw the demand, or we can increase the supply. I don't see why we can't just, you know, change the zoning laws or something to increase the number of houses. It sounds like we're fighting we're playing whack-a-mole when we really should just, you know, build houses and actually get people housing they need.
All right, thank you for that. I want to read a couple of emails. Tuffy says, I feel so down about the tents and the cranes from any roof top. All you see are cranes in the air. We are all going to be displaced in this towns of cranes and being tents on the streets. I have another email from, let's see, David, who says, I was born and raised in San Francisco. I'm holding on by my fingernails. The only place I can afford is an SRO in the Tenderloin. This is a single room. He says, no cooking, no bath in the hall, 10x4 room, bed bugs and roaches. But I'm fighting alongside many for change. We need to consider recalling Mayor Ed Lee, a move your guests are against. A successful recall would be a huge boost across the issues, police, gentrification, and homelessness. Thank you for that. And we have just a number of emails from people who say that this is applying to them. Do you want to take just quickly, we briefly talked about D a couple of weeks ago, but what about D, Tim? It's going to limit the mayor's power in filling vacancies.
Yeah,
position,
I mean,
D.
To me, this is just basic political science, good government 101. As the caller said, you don't have the executive appoint members of the legislature. The president does not appoint members of Congress. The governor does not appoint members of the state assembly. That's just how it should work. And so, but right now in San Francisco, we have an extraordinarily powerful mayor. I'm not talking about Ed Lee individually. The position of mayor in San Francisco is extraordinarily powerful. And one of those powers is the ability to appoint members of his or her own legislature, the Board of Supervisors. So what Prop D would do is basically say, no, if a supervisor leaves midterm, we're going to have a special election, just like you do for Congress, just like you do for state legislature. Within 120 days, we're going to have a special election, and the people who live in that district will be able to decide who their next supervisor is. Then we're not going to get the Julie Christensen situation where their mayor appointed somebody who turned out to be not a good supervisor and, in fact, somebody who made the Airbnb law that was already weak even worse. And, you know, Aaron Peskin was in a position to actually challenge her. It's hard. It's very hard to challenge an incumbent. The power of incumbency is tremendous in any politics, particularly in San Francisco. So that's what Prop D would do.
All right. And voting for this initiative, John Avalos, David Campos, Jane Kim, Eric Marr, Aaron Peskin, Norman Yee, voting against London Breed, Malia Cohen, Mark Farrell, Katie Tang, and Scott Weiner, just to give you some information about D. And then, Deborah, what about building more? Why can't we just build more housing? Well, there is a lot of housing being built in San Francisco, a lot of luxury condos that are incredibly expensive. But what did you learn about that?
Well, it's what kind of supply.
Right.
I mean, you're not going to decrease demand at all. There's a need for more supply, but the question is it going to be market rate or is it going to be affordable housing? And I think that's what a lot of progressive supervisors are wanting to negotiate with real estate developers about is, you know, to what extent can we get our developers to participate in their, you know, being responsible to the city in terms of, you know, allowing a middle class to exist in San Francisco. So I think it's, you know, the quality of the supply is what part of the question is about.
Mm. I think we're headed to a situation because I was part of the first dot-com boom when I founded Salon back in 1995, and I saw how that cratered, you know, by the end of the century. And I think we're headed for another bust. That's just the nature of capitalism. What goes up comes down. And we're already seeing Twitter announcing major layoffs, I think 8% of its workforce.
350 people.
So, I mean, we may be facing an oversupply of high-priced housing in the city very soon. But I wanted to get back to this idea because I think we're sort of, you know, maybe bumming ourselves out and maybe the listeners a little bit. But one of the really the greatest aspects of this film, Company Town, is it shows that we can win. And Aaron Peskin, yes, he was an unusual candidate because he was so experienced and he had such a gift for campaigning. He had a great network of people behind him. But it was the people on the streets working for him. And I remember, and the film shows this so beautifully, that night when he won, the celebration in North Beach at Cafe Fugazi.
Fugazi.
It was just the elation of people, all sorts of people, young and old, every race. He put together an amazing coalition. And that, to me, is the beauty of grassroots democracy. We may be completely demoralized by the choices we face at the national level this November, but locally you can really have an impact. And I think that's why Deborah and Tim and I and all the people we've worked with over the years still believe in some way in, you know, basic grassroots democracy, because we've seen that it can work if you get involved. We can't whine, just whine. I have a saying now, don't whine, organize.
Yep.
You know, like Joe Hill, the old labor organizer said, don't mourn, organize. I say, don't whine, organize.
Well, we have an email from Sue who says, what's being done to educate and massively mobilize renters to get out and vote?
Well, that's one of the things that a lot of groups in the city are trying to do. The San Francisco Tenants Union is sending out mailers to try to tell people you got to get out and vote. You know, that's one of the things that the Bay Guardian has done. And I agree with David. This is, you know, we can fight back. And that's why all three of us get up in the morning. And you too, Rose. I mean, this is why we do this, because we can fight back, and the movie shows that we can fight back and win.
And it's fun.
And you know, lots of people, I think, are going to vote in this election who don't often vote in local elections because they're presidential, and people are going to come out to vote against Donald Trump in San Francisco. And we're going to have higher than usual voter turnout. I really encourage people who are, first of all, to vote, and second, inform yourself about the local issues. Mm. Don't just go in there and vote for your candidate for president. Look at what's happening down the ballot. Look at the candidates for supervisor from your district. Look at the state Senate candidates. Look at what's going to happen to the town that you live in when you walk out the door in the morning, because what you do down ballot may end up being more important than who you vote for president.
So important. And Deborah, final thoughts?
That San Francisco is a great city and has a great tradition of iconoclasts and artists and weirdos and dissenters. And it's something worth fighting for. And I do think we can win if we all get mobilized. So I thank the caller or the emailer for that question.
Deborah Kaufman and her husband, Alan Snitow, directed and produced Company Town. It opens tomorrow at the Roxy in San Francisco. If you go to the first showing at 7 o'clock, there will be a Q&A after the showing. Elmwood Theater in Berkeley also opens tomorrow, and then on Sunday, November 6th, at the Smith Rafael Cinema in San Rafael. Tim Redmond is a veteran journalist and founder of 48 Hills, and David Talbot is a journalist and writer, author of The Devil's Chessboard and Season of the Witch. Deborah, Tim, and David, thank you for coming in.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. And thank you for listening. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's your call. On the next Your Call, it's our Friday Media Roundtable. This week, we'll discuss the forced removal of refugees from the camp in Calais, France. Thousands of people fleeing war and poverty were staying in Calais as they waited to cross the English Channel into Britain. We'll also discuss coverage of the peaceful protests against the Dakota Access Pipeline. So far, more than 126 Native Americans and their non-Native allies have been arrested. Join us live at 10 a.m. with me, Rose Aguilar, and you.
I'm Tavis Smiley. A little news.
The Republican Party and the African-American community are better off when we're all showing each other respect.
A little laughter.
David Hasselhoff. He's half black, tan, and curly afro like you have.
A lot of information.
Companies are cutting back on benefits. They're asking you as an employee to pay a bigger share of that.
Those are the ingredients we try to mix into each conversation each week on the Tavis Smiley Show from PRI.
Tomorrow at 12 noon here on 91.7 KLW San Francisco, we'd like to thank local businesses providing sustenance for our volunteers and staff during our recent membership drive, including Goat Hill Pizza, Potrero Hill's oldest restaurant, for Sourdough Pizzas and Luca Ravioli Company for fresh focaccia and frittata. The next time you visit, please thank them for supporting KALW. You can find links to them and all our other food donors at our website, klw.org. KALW San Francisco, it's 11 o'clock.
On today's special election edition of Your Call, we'll discuss the ramifications of Proposition 62 and 66 from the perspective of prisoners. Proposition 66 would speed up the review and decisions process for death row appeals, which would result in a faster timeline for executions. Proposition 62 would abolish the death penalty by replacing it with life without parole. We'll find out why the California Coalition for Women Prisoners opposes both measures. And then later in the show, we will follow the money in local and state races. So far, $150 million has been spent on California propositions alone. Join us after the news.